Now would be a fine time to turn down the cell phones. Boker tov. Welcome back. Hope everybody had a fine time. Everybody's healthy. On diet. I once heard from one of my great teachers, Rabbi Tendler, at YU, who said that the custom mentioned in the calendar, found in the calendars, of a three-day fast day after the Chagim, Monday, Thursday, Monday, it's called Tanit Bahab, was Judaism's response to Weight Watchers. Three times a year, the Eretz Yisrael sinks by 3 or 4 centimeters. It's after Sukkot, Pesach, and Chanukah from the Sufganiyot. So we'll get back on track on our subject matter, the Rambam Sefer Mitzvot, but with the subject of the mitzvah of Sefirat HaOmer, obviously a relevant topic for this season. And I'll say at the outset that what the Rambam does not have at all in any of his writings is the spirit of avilut, mourning, during the Omer period. To many of us, we've somehow put the mitzvah of counting the Omer somewhat secondary, because you ask the questions of what you can't do in the period of the Omer. And do you have to like Bomer? Do you start with Rosh Chodesh? And all these shaylot, can you make a wedding? Can you do a bar mitzvah? They're so busy and preoccupied with the Avelut. Well, it just so happens that in the Gemara, it never tells us that this is a period of Avelut. The Gemara does tell us that in the period between Pesach and Shavuot, 12,000 couples of students, that means 24,000 students of Rabbi Akiva, perish in this period. The Gemara doesn't even tell us of anything about Lag BaOmer. It's inferred by a very reading of the Gemara. But the Gemara just says, "Mipesach va'ad atzeret, from Pesach until Shavuot, meitu tamidei de Rabbi Akiva, shelo nagu kavod ze lezeh, they did not respect each other." The Gemara tries to figure out what happens, some type of epidemic. In the letter of Rav Shrira Gaon, he's the father of the famous Rav Hai Gaon. This Rav Shrira Gaon was asked a very simple question: how was the Mishnah written? How was the Gemara written? He gives a very long-winded response that becomes a letter, almost a book in itself, Igeret Rav Shira Gaon, which he provides dates and places and names of personalities of the Gaonic period from the 5th to the 10th century who we never heard of. And if not for him, we never would have heard of. But among other things, when he talks about the period of the Mishnah and the Gemara, so he also refers to this episode of the students of Rabbi Akiva, and says very clearly that they were warriors, soldiers of Bar Kokhba, and they fell in battle, and they were students of Rabbi Akiva. And the reason why in the Gemara, it's doctored up that they, you know, Gemara says, what happened? Well, there was this disease, there's that disease, an epidemic. Because you have to realize when this Medrash or this Agadah was put together, the Romans were still in town. And the last thing in the world that the Chachamim wanted to do was to brag about the Mered Bar Kokhba. They didn't want to do that. It would have opened up sore wounds in the part of the Romans. So therefore, it was written in the sense that they died in an epidemic, a plague, whatever it was. But Rav Shira Gaon, living hundreds of years later in Baghdad, has no problem with this, to say it as it is, that they fell in the Bar Kokhba War. And the question that the Gemara has is, why did they fall? The theological question. So why did the Bar Kokhba Revolution fail? Basically, that was the question that they were groping with. And the answer was, Shelo nagu kavod zubazu. If that which brought down the second Beit HaMikdash was Sinat Chinam, Jews did not like another Jew for no reason whatsoever. So if Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva had disrespect for each other, what do you expect from the average guy on the street? I mean, these are people who should know better. He's a Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva. So I think once I even gave you some examples of how B'nai Torah can not have mutual respect. It's when somebody gets up to say a Dvar Torah in Shul, and another guy walks out because, you know, what am I going to learn from this fellow? It happens all the time in shuls, by the way. The people who you would expect to have the most derech eretz for someone getting up to say a dvar Torah or shir, you get the least compliance because people think, well, listen, I can do better, so what do I have to learn from this fellow? Even if it was true, first of all, it shows haughtiness. It says, mikom olam da yiskalti, you can learn from everybody. But even if it's true that you learn absolutely zero from that person, it's a terrible thing to pick yourself up and walk out. And it's an act of disrespect. It's a slap in the face of Torah. And what do you expect other people there to feel? The impression that you give. So this was lo nagu kavod zelazet. And this kind of stuff was going on. And that's why Bar Kokhba revolution did not snowball into Yemot HaMashiach, as Rabbi Akiva envisioned. It's a tragedy, no doubt. On the other hand, we talk about Yeshivot Hezder, the type of yeshiva that combines army service. So people turn to Yeshivat Keren B'Yavne in 1954, was founded, first Rosh Yeshiva, Rav Goldberg. And here you have yeshiva boys, you know, combining army service. Yeshivat Keren B'Yavne in 1954 is not the first Yeshivat Hezder. Apparently it was Rabbi Akiva's yeshiva in Bnei Brak, of all places. Bnei Brak. He was running Yeshivat Hezder. I mean, you think that these 24,000 students, when the Bar Kokhba revolution broke out, so Rabbi Akiva says, all right, now you go to basic training. I mean, they were trained soldiers already. They were trained soldiers, warriors. And he had them as his talmidim, which means he felt the need to have a combination type of yeshiva, of study and readiness, military readiness. So all this is not in the Rambam. Not in the Rambam. There's no tradition whatsoever of mourning period between Pesach and Shavuot in the Rambam. And that's why in the Yemenite tradition, which adopted at least part of Yemen, good part of Yemen, the part of the famous Dayan Rav Kapach Zatzal, they lived by the Rambam word for word. And there is no mourning, no Avilut during this period. The only ones who have the Avilut are Ashkenazim on two different levels of breakup, and some of the Sfardim also, but all of the Sfardim have it, up until at least like Ba'omer. The Sfardim even have it to the day after like Ba'omer, the 34th of the Omer. But it's a period of partial Avilut. But again, in the Rambam, you're not going to find this. So what is the mitzvah, the period of the Omer, all about? It's two things. In days of Beit HaMikdash, it was the counting of from one Korban to the other, from the 16th of Nisan, the offering of the Omer Korban, and the day of Shavuot, the offering of the two breads, the Shtei Alechem. And to bridge these two Korbanot, we counted, Usfartem Lechem Mimochorat HaShabbat, Miyom HaViyachem Et Omer HaTnufa, Sheva Shabbatot Motiena, Ad Mimochorat HaShabbat HaShvi'it, Tesperu Chamishim Yom, Vikraftem Mincha Chadasha Lashem. This is the proof text from Vayikra Kav Gimel, Parshat Emor, which is nicknamed Parshat HaMoadot. It's the Perek of the Chagim, Ele Moadei Hashem Mikro'ei Kodesh. Yafeh. So here the Rambam in source number one, in the Sefer Mitzvot, in positive mitzvah Kuf Samach Aleph, 161, says as follows, by mitzvah Kuf Samach Aleph, the 161st positive mitzvah, he should tzivanu l'spor, to count, Miktzirata Omer, from the time of the cutting of the barley that measured up to an Omer's worth, how many days do you count? Tish'av Arba'im Yom, 49 days. V'omro, and this is what the Torah means, V'usfartem lachem imochat HaShabbat. V'da, and you shall know, Ki kemoshi nitchayvu Beit Din, as Beit Din was instructed, Limnot shnot yovel, shana shana, u'shmita shmita, Am Yisrael does not count the years of Shemitah, but as individuals, but Am Yisrael as a collective body does count the 7 years of Shemitah and the 50th year of Yovel. But who does the counting? In fact, the Beit Din, the Sanhedrin, that acts as a proxy, as a representative of all of Klal Yisrael. So he says, you should know, Kemoshe nitchayvu Beit Din limnot shnot yovel shana shana u'shmita shmita, Kemoshe biyarnu b'mashe kadam, like I previously already delineated, Kach chayav kol echad v'echad mimenu limnot yemei ha'omer yom yom v'shavua shavua. That's the same way that we count each day of the Omer and each week of the Omer. Shehu amar, because it says in Parshat Emor, Tisperu chamishim yom, count 50 days. Ve'amar, it also says in Parshat Re'eh, in Sefer Devarim, Shiva shavuot tispor lach, count the weeks. So you have two different psukim. One talks about counting days, one talks about counting weeks. We do both. Kumosha minyan hashanim vashmitim mitzvah achat. And just as the counting of the years of the 7 years of Shemitah and then the 50th year as Yovel are not independent mitzvot, but it's all one package deal and one mitzvah, so too is the counting of the Omer mitzvah achat. It's one mitzvah. Now the reason that the Rambam elaborates a little bit to try to make the point that the counting of the days of the Omer and the weeks of the Omer is one mitzvah, and he's going to go on to fortify this proof, is because he was well aware of the fact that there were those who argued and counted in the listing of 613 two positions, two places. One, the counting of the weeks of the Omer, one counting of the days of the Omer. Because if the Torah speaks about two different parshiyot, it's possible that there are two different countings. And the Rambam's trying to negate that point of view. If you just jump down to source number two, the Gemara Masechet Menachot, Daf Samach Vav, it says Gufa. Gufa is just an introduction that something's been lifted out of context of something that was already said in the Gemara previously. Amar Abaye, the Amora Abaye says, Mitzvah l'mimnei yomei u'mitzvah l'mimnei shvu'ei. The mitzvah is to count the days, the mitzvah is to count the weeks. Rabbanan debei Rav Ashi, the students in the yeshiva of Rav Ashi, manu yomei u'manu shvu'ei. Indeed, they counted the days and the weeks of the Omer. But a Meimar, a contemporary of Rav Ashi, argued and said, mani yomei counted the days, v'lo manei shvu'ei, did not count the weeks of the Omer. Amar, he said, zecher l'mikdasho. The whole business of Sfirat HaOmer is just a Zechel HaMikdash. And if it's a Zechel HaMikdash, it's okay to partially count and not count the entire mitzvah of days and weeks. So Rashi in source number 3 tries to explain this. What does it mean? Ameimar mani yomei velo shvuei. Ameimar counted the days and not the weeks. Amar, he said, Hai minyana dehashta, the counting of today, the contemporary counting, in the absence of Beit HaMikdash, Lav chovahi is not obligatory. Why? The haleka omer, there's no korban omer. If you read the psukim in a very, very simple way, it appears, usfartem lachem mimochorat ha-shabbat, miyom abiyachem et omer tnufa, that it's all linked to the offering of the omer korban. But in the absence of Beit HaMikdash, there's no omer korban. So if there's no omer korban, there's no counting of the omer. There's no counting at all. The whole mitzvah falls. Very similar to the idea we spoke before Pesach about maror. There is no mitzvah in the Torah that you have to eat maror on Seder night. No mitzvah at all. It says that when you eat the Korban Pesach, you eat it together with matzah and maror. But if you don't have... So matzah, as it was, there's an independent pasuk teaching us that we eat matzah whether there is a Korban Pesach or not. So matzah remains a biblical mitzvah obligation. But maror is dropped. Just like Korban Pesach is not here, maror is not here either. So Chachamim instituted the eating of a kezayit's worth of maror at Seder night to remind us that once upon a time there was such a thing called maror. So that's rabbinic. We know that maror is only a rabbinic obligation today. And here, the Rambam is saying, what Rashi is saying, I'm sorry, explaining the view of a Meimar, that today the counting of the Sfira is only rabbinic because the whole Beit HaMikdash, unfortunately, is not here. And to prove the point that the whole thing is, we do it as a gesture of remembering Beit HaMikdash, we have something very unusual. We finish counting the Sfira, so there's like a petition, like a tefillah. Harachamanu yachzir lanu avodat Beit HaMikdash b'mkoma b'merah b'yameinu amein selah. That we ask Kadosh Baruch Hu, you should restore Beit HaMikdash. I mean, you can say that anytime, the whole year, you can say that for everything. But why is it said after the counting of the Omer? Because we want to make a point that we really are not fulfilling the mitzvah the way we should, because we don't have the Korban HaOmer, and the counting of the Omer is just a reminder of this. So we ask Kadosh Baruch Hu, you know, should give us the opportunity that we should be able to fulfill the mitzvah on a biblical level when there would be, once again, the Korban HaOmer, the Omer sacrifice in Beit HaMikdash. People have asked the question on whether it would be proper to say what's printed in the Sidurim, Hinani Muham Zuman Lekayem Mitzvat Asei Shel Sfirat HaOmer. Here I am prepared to fulfill the mitzvah, positive mitzvah of counting the Omer, as it says, Usfartem Lachem. Many shuls they sing it, especially on Friday night or on Yom Tov. Hinani Muham Zuman, and so on. So people have asked, what do you mean Hinani Muham Zuman Lekayem Mitzvat Asei? It's not a mitzvah any longer. There's no Beit HaMikdash. It's just a rabbinic mitzvah. So the answer is two things. One is, who said that the mitzvah taseh mit the Rabbanan, you don't need preparation? So think that it's a rabbinic mitzvah. Hinei mukhayim zman, the kayim mitzvah to say, parenthesis, rabbinic, mitabanan. Or, even according to this view that Rashi is talking about, which is the basic view of Ashkenaz Jewry, that the Sfirat HaOmer is linked to the Korban HaOmer, and without in the absence of Beit HaMikdash, there is no biblical mitzvah of Sfira today, and it's only rabbinic in Zecher LeMikdash. To remember, we ask a Kadosh Baruch Hu, we tell a Kadosh Baruch Hu, in spite of all that, we are ready and prepared to fulfill the biblical mitzvah. Just give us that chance, give us the opportunity. And that's why we say, Arachamanu Yachzir Lanu Avodat Beit HaMikdash. And here we are, we're ready to go. And what's interesting is that we have adopted the opinion of what the Gemara says in the name of the students of Rav Ashi, not according to Amemar. We count the days and the weeks. Rashi is telling us a story that in source number 3, that the counting of today, Hai Minyana Dehashta, the counting of today, Lavcho Vahi, is not obligatory. The Haleka Omer, Elazek on the Mikdash Bialma. It's only a remembrance of Beit HaMikdash. Hilkach, therefore, Biyom Meisagi, it's sufficient, it's adequate just to count the days. We're going to see in a few minutes that there's great significance in this particular viewpoint. Why just count the days and not count the weeks? The deletion of the weeks is of great significance in the era when there's no Beit HaMikdash. Yet, according to Rashi and the Balei HaTosfot, which means the Chachmei Ashkenaz, we all adopt the opinion that it's not biblical. It's not biblical at all, but it's only rabbinic. So how come indeed we do count the days and the weeks? So the answer is that there are two different types of Zecher LeMikdash. Two different types. This is an idea that our Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik Zal talked about in various contexts. And that is, Zecher LeMikdash shows up in a sugya in Maseret Baba Batra, Daf Samach, around the pasuk, Im Ishkachech Yerushalayim Tishkach Yemini. Around that pasuk, the Gemara says that after the destruction of Beit HaMikdash, we should stop eating meat the whole year, stop drinking wine the whole year, because of the abolition of the animal sacrifices and the nisachim, the wine libation. So we shouldn't eat meat or drink wine the whole year. Zecher LeMikdash, because we are in mourning Beit HaMikdash. Then the Gemara says, well, if that's the case, so stop eating fruit, because there's no Bikurim mitzvah. And well, if that's the case, stop eating bread, because there's no Korban Mincha, right? Notice it didn't say stop eating donuts, you know, because that's going to be a problem. That's going to be a big problem, right? And then it says stop drinking water, because on Sukkot we have Nisu Chamayim. The Gemara brings it to the absurd conclusion and says, all right, you know, we can't live like that. So all right, you can drink water and you can have bread and you can eat fruit and you can even eat meat and you can even drink wine, but scale down a festive meal, leave played out, leave a setting undone. When you're redoing your house, leave something unfinished. Every Kablan fulfills this obligation, L'chumra. L'chumra. And L'mahadrin. Leave something out, right? It's true, right? So it's something. We did Shibbutzim a year and a half ago. So here and there were things that were, you know, not perfect. And what we just brushed it off as Zecher LeMikdash. This was our Zecher LeMikdash wall. Because I don't like, I mean, look, I'm not taking issue with anybody who did this, but some people make these very nice decorative walls, you know, a little corner, and it looks like the wall of the Kotel, and have inscription on it, the Mishkachech. That's not what the Halacha talked about. The Halacha didn't want an artistic rendition of Zecher LeMikdash. The Halacha wanted a churva, something that's not done. Not done, and it looks terrible, looks bad. That's the whole point of leaving something blank. But that's all Im Eshkachech Yerushalayim. Then the Gemara talks about something, and that's Avelut. Now, under the wedding, under the chuppah, we do all these things as well. Right? We break a glass. We do things to downscale the moment of Simcha because of Churban HaBayit. That's why in Ashkenazi ritual, the Kala removes jewelry before the chuppah, for the same reason, or some of you know that you've seen this maybe, ashes on the forehead of the chatan. Some people, the Rav did it, and not family, only those who wanted to do it did it. I didn't force it. Remember my son Eitan, the pilot, he wanted the ashes on the forehead. So under the chuppah, my wife said, you don't need a kezayit. You know? It's just a minuscule of effort. Let's not give him a black shirt, you know, like... But I once did a wedding for a non-religious couple, and I think it's a wonderful thing. And I saw that the chosen had an earring, and I was wondering if the minig covers the chosen also. I just decided, I was so happy they were agreed to have a chuppah, kedatu kedin, they didn't bother with his earring, you know. But these are things that we know are part of scaling down the simcha. There's a beseder. Then there's another sugya in Masechet Sukkah, Daf Mem Aleph, that talks about Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. We know that the Arba Minim is to take Arba Minim on day one. In Beit HaMikdash, and in Beit HaMikdash proximity, they took Arba Minim for 7 days. Usmachtem lefnei Hashem lokechem shivat yamin. After the Churban, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai institutes that we should all take the Arba Minim for 7 days, which is what we do. We take 1 day biblical, midoraita, 7 days, and the rest 6 days is midrabanan. And the Gemara brings a proof text from Yirmiyahu. It says, Tzion hi doresh ein la. Yerushalayim is sitting there, Tzion hi, but nobody is inquiring about the welfare of Yerushalayim. So Gemara says, you see from here that you're supposed to inquire about Yerushalayim. How is that translates in halakhically? That we should continue be doing things that were done in the days of Beit HaMikdash, in spite of the Churban, in spite of the destruction. So Rav said that this is not avilut, this is not mourning, but this is keeping the machinery properly, you know, oiled up, so that when we have Beit HaMikdash, things won't get rusty. We'll still be doing it. We still have been doing it all these years. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai wanted to keep the issue of lulav and etrog for 7 days, at least on the back burner, that it shouldn't be just put away into the archives and so on for posterity, but rather we're still doing it. So you have two different ideas of Zecher HaMikdash. Zecher HaMikdash, that's in essence mourning, and Zecher HaMikdash, that's in essence doing what was done in time Beit HaMikdash. Like on the Seder night, Zecher HaMikdash ki Hillel, Kein Esra Hillel, the Korech, the sandwich. This is the way Hillel did it the time Beit HaMikdash. He would sandwich together the matzah and maror. But we just ate matzah, we just ate maror. So why are we doing Korech? Because we want to do something that was proper in the days of Beit HaMikdash. The Shor HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we're ready to go. You know, give us Korban Pesach, and we're going to do the sandwich with the matzah and the maror. Al matzotam rorim yochluhu. It expresses itself also in the world of minhag, in customs. In the world of customs, we moved down to Be'er Sheva in 1981. So on Erev Pesach, I may have mentioned this before, Yavtov, that the fragrance in the air was that of Yom Ha'atzmaut. People were just doing mangal, they were doing barbecue. What are you doing, barbecue? It was lamb chops. Lamb chops, Ashkenazim, don't touch lamb chops, broiled lamb chops on Seder night. Not only that, some have the custom not to eat any broiled meat on Seder night, for that matter. And the Sfardim, they were busy eating lamb chops at Seder night. The answer is that Ashkenazim took the point of view of the Avilut, the mourning. That's why some Ashkenazim have the custom of having hard-boiled eggs and salt water at Seder night, which is an expression of Avilut, of mourning. The Sfardim took it the other way. It's better to be a Sfardi. We're not eating Korban Pesach, but we're ready to go. We're ready to go with the lamb chops, you know, on the open fire. And that's a different way of seeing things. So, going back to source number two, Amemar says he counted the days and didn't count the weeks. Why didn't he count the weeks of the Omer after the destruction of Second Beit Midash? Because the Parsha of Re'eh talks about Aliyah L'Regel. That's what the mitzvot are. When the Torah repeats the Shalosh Regalim in Parshat Re'eh, it's shalosh pamim bashana yere'eh kol zchuchat b'nei Hashem Elokecha b'makoma she'ivchar b'chag ha'matzot b'chag ha'shavuot b'chag ha'sukkot. We say this pasuk in Musaf on all the chagim. It's aliyah l'regel. So in the terms of aliyah l'regel, in the absence of Beit HaMikdash, it's not relevant. So shivah shavuot tispor lach is not relevant. Yet the pasuk in Parshat Emor that simply talks about the chagim of Shabbat and Yom Tov are relevant even in the absence of Beit HaMikdash. So that's why he counted the days, where it says, Tisperu chamishim yom, count the days, that was relevant. So this was an expression of mourning, of avilut, it was zechel the mikdash of mourning, by performing the mitzvah as an abbreviated mitzvah. Whereas the Rabbanan, the Bei Rav Ashi said, in spite of the fact that there is no Beit HaMikdash, and the mitzvah of Sfirat HaOmer has been relegated to rabbinic status, Nevertheless, we're going to force it through and still count the part of the mitzvah that may not be relevant because there's no Beit HaMikdash, there's no Aliyah LeRegel. We'll count it anyway. We'll show HaKadosh Baruch Hu that we're not giving up on the pasuk Shiva Shavuot Tispor Lach. And that's how the Rav explained this dispute in the Gemara in light of the Ashkenazi thinking that Sfirat HaOmer is rabbinic today. On the other hand, you can make a case to say that the very machloket between the students of Rav Ashi and his contemporary Rav Amemar is on the core issue whether Sfirat HaOmer today is biblical or not. And according to the students of Rav Ashi, the reason why they counted weeks and days and weeks because it remains biblical and therefore it's not necessarily linked to the Korban HaOmer. Listen carefully, not necessarily linked to the Korban HaOmer. And the Amemar says, no, it is linked to the Korban HaOmer, and therefore it's only rabbinic today, so we don't have to count the whole counting, just the counting of the days is enough, you don't have to count the weeks.
Does that make a difference, therefore,
there are enormous ramifications. Right, so it clearly impacts on the question of what happens if a person forgets to count the Omer. Because there's an issue called Tmimot Tiyena, and that was interpreted by one of the days of the Geonim, the Halachot Gedolot, that you have to count all 49 days. If you miss a day, so you've broken the sequence, and you can continue counting, but without a bracha. And that became normative. I mean, that view of the Halachot Gedolot makes it all the way up to the Mishnah Berurah, and every kid growing up learns it in Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, and that's the way it goes. The Rambam doesn't believe that at all. The Rambam believes that every single day is an independent counting, and even if you forgot 25 days, you still count with a bracha on the 26th. The Rambam believes that every single day is an independent mitzvah, and you count with the bracha. And I'll tell you where it comes up. This question comes up on two cases. One is a convert between Pesach and Shavuot. What does the person do with Sfir Simon? The person becomes a ger on Yom HaTzmut. A ger. So he didn't count the first two or three weeks of the Omer. And now he's jumping in, you know, on the 19th, the 18th, the 19th of Iyar, of Lag BaOmer, let's say. A fellow becomes a ger on Lag BaOmer. So does he count the remaining days with a bracha or not? So according to the Halachot Gedolot, clearly not, because he never started from day one. So next year, we start from day one of the Omer, but this year he just counts without a bracha. According to the Rambam, comes a ger on the 49th day. He counts the 49th day with a bracha. The person becomes a ger in Erev Shavuos, he counts with a bracha for that one day that he's Jewish, because each day is an independent mitzvah.
Is anybody doing that today?
This view that I just said is normative. It's the halacha in town. That's exactly...
So if you miss a day...
If a person misses a day, so if a person misses counting a night, you can catch it in the morning and count without a bracha in the morning and then continue counting with a bracha.
What if you miss 2 days?
If you miss 24-hour period, you didn't count the eighth day, and all of a sudden tonight you hear a Sfir Sayim and you say, I missed the eighth day. So the halacha is that you continue counting without a bracha. That's the way we practice today.
So we're not doing Rambam today?
We're not doing Rambam today. That's correct. We're teaching Rambam today, but we're not doing Rambam today.
No.
You're right.
You make a serious argument for both.
Listen, Rambam was a serious man. You can make a very serious argument. Yeah,
Jay. Why
don't you make me whoa. Okay, hold off with that question. I'll see if I have time for it. That's a tough one. It's been asked with a whole slew of answers. But the question is, why didn't make a Shechianu on the first night of the Sfir Simon? So it's a very good question. But there are many, many different answers. But hold off. I'm still train of thought here. So beyond the ger, you also have a bar mitzvah boy. Well, for that matter, a bar mitzvah girl. But then we have to discuss about the level of obligation of a woman in Sfirat HaOmer. So let's put the ladies aside for a second. Excuse me. Right. I know I got to do it. Rivka, I know I'm in trouble. I know. Big trouble. Yeah.
So why don't we do Rambam?
Because we're not Sfardim.
We have
an Ashkenazi tradition. Okay. We were born in, you know, most of us here were born into an Ashkenazi tradition that the authors of the Tosfot carried the day, specifically Rashi and his grandson, Rabbeinu Tam, and those views made it to the Ramah, Rabbi Moshe Isserles in Shulchan Aruch, and he's the counter view to Rabbi Yosef Karo, the Sfardi in Shulchan Aruch. So that's our tradition. So if you remember, you go back to Fiddle on the Roof, tradition. No, I'm serious.
I
It's our Masoret. It's our Masoret. That's all.
So Svad will continue with the bracha today.
Correct. Correct. Many, not all, but many will. Right. The Yemenites, 100%. And Sfardim, as they say, yesh v'yesh, because a lot of times there's crossover minhag. That's already a later development. But I'm still in the Middle Ages here. Right? And this is the way it was. The question is that Bar Mitzvah boy, between Pesach and Shavuot, what does he do in the year of a Bar Mitzvah? So we know that a child under Bar Mitzvah can do mitzvot with brachot. Whether it's Birkat HaMazon, whether it's davening, whether it's a bracha on Lulav and Sukkah. Everyone knows that for chinuch, for education, for training, you can say a bracha. That's not an issue. So when the kid's not Bar Mitzvah on the second night of Pesach, and he says, Baruch Atah Hashem, Ken Macholam, Asher Kishal, Mazor Tzivanu, Al Svirat HaOmer, that's fine. It's no different than the Alachilat Matzah that he said the night before, as a katan. I mean, the day before Bar Mitzvah, he's still a katan. And now he becomes Bar Mitzvah sometime between Pesach and Shavuot. So Rav Avad Yosef says that after his Bar Mitzvah that year, he continues saying Svir Saima without a bracha. Why? Because now he's obligated. Let's assume his Bar Mitzvah is Yom HaTzmud on the 5th of Iyar. So now he's obligated. But before, he wasn't obligated. So you cannot count that part that he counted legitimately for 2 weeks in training with now that he's an adult, a halachic adult. He didn't count the first 2 weeks because he wasn't obligated. So next year he'll count from day one like a ger, like a convert. But the Rav challenged this. The Rav, he believes that's not the case. And he says that which a child counts as a katan, even though the person wasn't obligated, but it becomes a kiyum, a fulfillment of a biblical mitzvah. The child has a fulfilled mitzvah, whatever level it is, d'oraita d'rabanan, however you define it, he has a mitzvah. It's not a blank act of just a rehearsal. It's not a dress rehearsal. The obligation may have been a dress rehearsal, but once, in fact, the under bar mitzvah boy or girl does an act of a mitzvah, it has status. It's a bona fide mitzvah. That's why the Rav's grandfather said, you can't give a child for chinuch an object of a mitzvah that's not kosher for an adult. So if you take, let's say, an etrog that became disqualified, don't let a kid make a bracha on it. No, that's wrong. You don't have to give a child a bracha, an etrog, that you spent 1,000 shekel for. You don't have to do that. But you have to give the child an etrog that if an adult made a bracha on it, he fulfills his obligation. You can't give him something that an adult would be in a disqualified etrog. Rav Chaim said it's anti-chinuchi. It's against the education. That's not how you educate. With the objects that are not kosher. So, having said that, the Rav said that when a katan, a 12-year-old and 11 months, he's a month before his bar mitzvah, he's counting Sfirat HaOmer, so he may not have been obligated in the counting, but once he did count, it has status. So you can connect that which he counted as a katan, as chinuch, with that which he's going to count after the bar mitzvah into one continuum, and certainly continues counting with a bracha. Against what Rav Avad Yosef said. But the Rav proved it, by the way, from Korban Pesach. Because a child is also exempt from eating Korban Pesach. Because he's a child, like any other mitzvah. But when the father took stock of, let's see, how many portions can we take this shepsula, this kevis, and how many can we give it out? Well, how much can we eat already? So let's invite the Goldbergs and the Schwartzes and the Shapiros. And that's what they do. They make a menu, they make a calculation. On one kevis, it's going to go around for 10 families. Because you only have to eat a kezayit, and that can really go around. So they take the children into consideration. They're going to give them a portion also. So the question is, who is obligated in Pesach Sheni on the month of Iyar, on the 14th? Who's obligated in Pesach Sheni? Only those who were obligated in Pesach Rishon, but didn't do it, because either they were far away from Yerushalayim or they were Tamei. So then they have obligation of Pesach Sheni. The question that the Gemara raises, what about a Ger, and what about a Katan, who became Bar Mitzvah before the 14th of Iyar? Would that child now, who's now Bar Mitzvah, come the 14th of Iyar, would he be obligated in Pesach Sheni? So the Rav proves that if he ate Korban Pesach as a child in Nisan, then he has no obligations to Pesach Sheni. Because that which he did as a katan, as a mitzvah act, is registered as a bona fide mitzvah act, And he's not considered someone who didn't fulfill his obligation of eating Korban Pesach in the month of Nisan. And hence he's exempt from bringing the Korban Pesach a month later in Iyar. This is a very good proof. It's a very solid proof. And that's why the Rav said that which the child counts the Svirat HaOmer before his Bar Mitzvah, and now counts after the Bar Mitzvah, before Shavuot, it all counts to its one, you know, continuation counting, and it works. And there's no need for a new bracha. So basically what we've stated was that according to the Chachmei Sfarad, Chachmei Ashkenaz, there's a linkage to the Korban, and that's why today there's no Svirat HaOmer d'oraita, biblical. And just the point that Jerry made before, there's even another ramification, and that is, what time can you start counting the Sfira? So if you hold like the Rambam, that it's still biblical, because the Rambam detached the counting from the Korban, then if it's a biblical mitzvah, night begins at Seta Kochavim, when the appearance of stars. Of course, that you look at the calendar. So that could be, in this case, 20 minutes after sundown. So sundown today is about 10 after 7, 7:11, 7:12, whatever. Count 20 minutes, let's say 7:32, 7:33. You can count, you already count the hour. You don't have to look at when Shabbos ends, because there we just take a little bit more strict opinion as to Seta Kochavim. We add another few minutes and so on. Rabbeinu Tam made it 72 minutes. Beside that, that's already add-ons. But the basic Seta Kochavim in Yerushalayim is about 18 to 20 minutes after sundown. You can count the Omer according to the Rambam. Not an issue. But according to the Tosfot, you can start counting from sundown. Because any rabbinic mitzvah, night begins at sundown. You don't have to wait till Seta Kochavim. Yeah.
We put the females aside.
Yeah. We've already put them aside. Yeah. What?
Can we come out?
Yeah, we're going to get back to the ladies. Don't worry, we'll get back to the ladies. I know, don't worry. I didn't forget about the ladies. So, the Rambam believes that there's a separation between the counting and the Korban. But one second, that negates the Psukim. It's clear in the Psukim that there is a connection. So flip the page on the bottom of Source 14. And we're going to see now, I always thought for many years that the author of this very novel view was the author of the Sefer HaChinuch. As a matter of fact, when we taught Sefer HaChinuch here 10, 15 years ago, whenever, that was the line that I took. But I am indebted to one of Rav Lichtenstein's sons, Rav Moshe Lichtenstein, who several years ago drew my attention to this line in the Rambam, Mor Nevuchim, Guide to the Perplexed, where I realized that the author of the Sefer HaChinuch took it from somewhere, and that is that there are two countings going on simultaneously. One is the count between the Omer Korban and the Shtei Alechem, the two breads, Korban HaShavuos, but that is the secondary count. That's not the real counting. The real counting is bridging between Yitziat Mitzrayim and Matan Torah. And whereas Kol Dovador Chayav Adam Lirot Et Atzmo Kiilu Yatzah Mitzrayim, annually, every generation, we have to consider as if we have left Mitzrayim on our level. We have to somehow reenact it on some level. So in every generation, we also accept upon ourselves the Torah and Chag HaShavuot. And those two markers, calendar markers, have to be bridged as well. And that has nothing to do with the existence of Beit HaMikdash, whether it's there or not. Every year, whether there is Beit HaMikdash, whether there's no Beit HaMikdash, these two calendar markers have to be bridged. And the only reason that we call it Korban HaSfirat HaOmer, because the Torah itself used the Korban HaOmer as a type of piggybacking and linking it to it, just we can have an associate by association only. But it's not the real counting. The real counting is from Yitziat Mitzrayim to Matan Torah. And therefore, the counting part of the mitzvah is biblical, because it was not erased, was not negated. And that's the rationale behind, the philosophical rationale behind the Rambam. With regard to, if you're pushing, with regard to women, so take a look what the... One second. I'll read it. I said it already out loud. I'll read it. U Shavuot, u Yom Matan Torah, is the giving of the Torah. U lehagdil ha-yom ahu, in order to glorify that day, nimnu ha-yamim min ha-moed ha-rishon elav, the days of the first Chag, which is Pesach, start counting, kemi shemamtin bo ha-ne'man shebo'avav, like you're waiting for something that you really love, you start counting towards, wow, another few days, it's coming. Out of anticipation, v'shehu moneh yom v'gam sha'ot. Sometimes you count the days, you count the hours. How many hours are left? V'zoti sibat svirat ha'omer, and this is the reason for the svirat ha'omer. Miyom tzeitenu mimitzrayim ad yom matan Torah. Shehu haya akavana v'atachlit b'yitziyatam. The whole purpose of Yitziyat Mitzrayim wasn't to get us out of Egypt, was to bring us to Mamay Har Sinai. But Amro, as it says, v'avi etchem elai. V'lo haya amareh agadol ahu ela yom echad. So that great auspicious occasion of giving of Torah was a one-day affair. That's why Shavuot is one day, not 7 days. Kein zichroneinu b'chol shana yom echad. That's why we remember this event as a one-day chag. But the Rambam says the counting is in anticipation annually for that. If you look at source number 6, the bottom of the first page, you have here Rambam Hilchot Tmidin Umusafin, where that's in the section of the two books that the Rambam deals with Beit HaMikdash matters. And among other things, he deals with the Korban HaOmer, which is a not a regular thing. It's we say musaf, it means add-on, it means extra. Lahavdil, you know, the newspapers give you a weekend edition with a musaf, right? It's not they're going to daven, it just means it's a supplement. Musaf means a supplement. So tefillat musaf is a supplementary tefillah that corresponds to the korban musaf of Shabbat or Rosh Chodesh or Yom Tov, which is the supplementary korban. Aside from the regular korban tamid, which is regular daily korban, we have occasionally supplementary korban. That's the korban musaf. But beyond the korban musaf, you have other supplementary things that went on in Beit HaMikdash, and one of them was the annual bringing of the omer barley on the second day of Pesach. So that's why it's in the 7th chapter of Tmidin Umusafin. Having said that, then the Rambam goes on to say in source number 6, Mitzvata say the spor sheva shabbatot tmimot miyom avata omer, from the day that the korban omer was brought, now you start counting 7 weeks. As it says, uspartem lachem mimochat shabbat sheva shabbatot umitzvah limnot hayamim ima shavuot. The mitzvah is count the days and the weeks. As it says, shenemar tisbru chamishim yom umitchilat hayom monim. You're supposed to count from the beginning of the day. Why? Because the Torah says tmimot tiyena, they should be complete days. And if you count in the daytime and didn't count yet at nighttime, so there are many, many hours that went by uncounted. So the Rambam's understanding of tmimot differs radically from the way the author of the Halachot Gedolot saw the word tmimot, complete. He saw it as a package deal of 49 days. You have to count all 49 days. You missed a day, you blew it. You know, litrot shana ba, we'll see you next year. But what they used to say for the Brooklyn Dodgers, wait till next year, right? Here, you count, the Rambam says the Tmimot goes on every day. Every day has to be completely counted. Lefikach, therefore, Muneh Balayla, Milel Shisha Asar B'Nisan, to begin at the nighttime. Because you may argue, if this is somehow linked to the bringing of the Korban HaOmer, the Korban HaOmer wasn't brought at night, it was brought at daytime. All Beit Mikdash activity was daytime. So why don't we count the Omer at nighttime, at daytime instead of nighttime? The answer is Tmimot Tiyena. It has to be complete, the counting. So that leads us to count at the nighttime. And then on the next page, you have Halacha Kav Gimel, Kav Dalid, and Kav Hei. Shachach v'lo mana b'layla, if you didn't count at night. Moneh b'yom, you counted the day. That's it, you counted the day. V'ein monim ele mu'umad. You're supposed to count standing up, avad immanam yushav yatsa. If you happen to have been sitting down, you count it, you fulfill your obligation. But it should be in the day. Standing up. And then in Hakat Kavdalud it says, mitzvah zua kolish miyisrael, it's a mitzvah on every person called Yisrael, b'kol makom kol zman. Here he says it clearly, it has nothing to do with Beit HaMikdash, it's in every season, in every period of history, and so on, in every location. V'nashim v'avadim p'turim imena. Evet evet kinani, who are obligated in some of the mitzvot asay, but this is the mitzvot asay she hazman grama. It's a time-bound mitzvah. We just glance down to source 7, the Kesef Mishnah. This is Rabbi Yosef Karo commenting on the Rambam. U'mashi katav, what he says, nashim v'avadim p'turim imena, mishum de mitzvot asay she hazman grama, because it's a time-bound mitzvah, classic time-bound mitzvah. And then the Rambam says back in the last paragraph of the previous source, Halakha Kafe, Tzarich Levarech Kolayla, you have to make a bracha each night, Bet Alafiu, Bochat Hashem, Elkenu Macholam, Eshek Shalom, Sav Tzivanu, all abbreviated, Al Sfirat HaOmer, Kodem Shispor, before you count. Manav Lo Birach, if you counted and you didn't make the bracha, Yatzah, you fulfilled your obligation, Veino Chosem Avarech, you don't do the mitzvah again, finished. Tomorrow you make the bracha. That's all. These four halachot, from the source number 6, Chav Bet, Chav Gimel, Chav Dalet, Chav Hei. It's not a lot of print, and it's not a lot of writing, even a manuscript, by the way. It's the tail end of the seventh chapter of Rambam Hilchot Midin Musafin. Is all the Rambam has to say about Sfirat Omer. That's it. I remember the Rav Sonrach, Professor Chaim Soloveitchik, pointed out that today you have whole art school books, full books, on the mitzvah of Sfirat Omer. You know, the Rambam spent a few lines, and you know, and that was it. He put it all together. He didn't have to have long-winded explanations. But having said that the mitzvah is a time-bound mitzvah, and that shows up in other writings of the Rambam, what a time-bound mitzvah is, and his classic example is tzitzis, in source number 8, where he says, Nashim v'avadim uktanim p'turim min mitzvah tzitzit min haTorah, are exempt from the mitzvah of tzitzis, u'midvrei sofrim, rabbinically, kol katan shiyodei l'tatev, chayav b'tzitzit kedei l'chanchol b'mitzvot. This is the obligation of education, before his bar mitzvah, you already give him a talus, or a talus cotton. Nashim v'avadim sheratzu l'tatev b'tzitzit, maybe we shouldn't read this out loud, the women who are interested in putting on tzitzis, mitatfim below bracha, put on a talus or without a bracha. This is Rambam classic, that all the time-bound mitzvahs, women can adopt to voluntarily perform them, but without a bracha. Why? Because Rambam's of the opinion, the word vitzivanu means obligated. So if you're not obligated, you can't say the word vitzivanu in the bracha. But you can do the mitzvah, you can voluntarily do the mitzvah. And the Rambam says, not just for tzitzit, Nachain shar mitzvot aseh shanashim tuvot mehen. All the other mitzvot that women are exempt, im ratzu lasot otan, below bracha. If they want to perform it without bracha, ein memachin biyadan, no protests. No protests. If a woman wants to do any of the mitzvot, and the next halacha actually gives us a list, and it could be tefillin, and it could be sukkah, and lulav, and shayfer, and whatnot. So, this is the Rambam. Now, arguing, taking issue with the Rambam is Rabbeinu Tam, who's Rashi's grandson, in source 9, the Tosfot, the Maseret Eruvin, Mikan Aleph Reish Taf, Amar Rabbeinu Tam, the Mutar Hashem Levarech, Al Kol Mitzvat Aseish Azman Grama, Afogav the Pturot, that a woman is allowed to make a bracha on any of the time-bound mitzvot, and so conduct our Ashkenazi women. So if a woman takes today, an Ashkenazi woman takes a Arba Minim, she does a bracha. If she if she sits in the sukkah, makes a bracha. If she's blowing shayfer, so if she's blowing shayfer of herself, for sure she makes a bracha. If somebody's blowing for hard, which is money most of the cases, if a woman couldn't make the shul for whatever reason, so a guy comes over, a man comes over, blows shayfer for her, but he'll tell the woman to make the bracha. In Ashkenazi circle, it's common. It's common practice that a woman will make a bracha on a mitzvah taseh, shazman garama, on a time-bound mitzvah, which is in line with Rabbeinu Tam. That's what he says. And then in the next line, the Mogen of Rome, one of the poskim on Shulchan Aruch says, Nashim p'turot misvirat from sviras ha'omer, davi mitzvat aseh shel zman grama. Umiu, however, kvar shavinu alayu chova. Women took upon themselves sviras ha'omer as an obligation. This is an Ashkenazi source, where I can tell you that the Svardim bend backwards the other way. Don't take upon yourself sviras ha'omer. There's a Kabbalistic side to this, why in the Svardi world, women have not taken upon themselves. In the next source, Birkei Yosef, who is the Chida is Chaim Yosef David Azulai, from the great, great Chachmei Sfarad of about 300 years ago, 350 years ago. So he wrote, Nashim Turot Bisfirat HaOmer. Women are exempt from Sfirat HaOmer. V'linireh, I believe, di'i noheget belulav. If she observes the mitzvah of lulav on Sukkos, u'kiyotzei ki Rabbeinu Tam, like in the view of Rabbeinu Tam, gam besfira yinagu ki orchayu. She can also continue, she can do the mitzvah of Sfirat HaOmer with the bracha also, if that's her derech. V'chein katav Magen Abraham, that's the way it's found in the Magen Abraham. Very nice. So you have now some poskim coming out clearly and saying that women took upon themselves Sfirat HaOmer, which, by the way, is the same case, same situation for shayfer. It's clear that women took upon themselves shayfer on Rosh Hashanah. Today, no woman says, well, maybe yes, maybe no. They'll be interested that if they couldn't make it to shul, that somebody should blow the shayfer for them. And many women took upon themselves Arba Minim, to say a bracha on the Luv and Esrei. And the truth of the matter is, it's dead wrong if somebody makes a sukkah on the porch, where sometimes the neighbor upstairs porch blocks in a part of it, so the women sit there. Wrong, wrong, wrong. If a woman's going to sit in the sukkah, she should be sitting under the schach. That's kosher. And so on. Not to sit and say, the men will sit under the schach, the women will sit under the neighbor's, it's schach, it is bamboo sticks there, but Trouble is, it's covered, so it's puzzle. You know, it's qualified. That's wrong. The whole issue takes a radical turn in source number 12, the Ramban. The Ramban says, with regard to the mitzvah of Svirata Omer, a startling, startling chidush. He says, mitzvat asei she'ein azman grama. There is a whole listing there in the Gemara of what's a mitzvat asei that's not zman grama, that women are obligated. And the Ramban wants to fill in the blanks of all kinds of mitzvot that were not mentioned in the Gemara, but there were also mitzvot asei she'lo azman grama, not time bound, women are obligated. And take a look what he includes. Sfirat HaOmer. Now how can Sfirat HaOmer be a non-time-bound mitzvah? And what the Ramban is saying here, all of these women are obligated. Biblically. Machala is not a time-bound mitzvah. For sure women are obligated. And Kibbud Avaim, for sure women are obligated. Bikurim, women are obligated. Kisui Adam, if they slaughter certain animals, they have to cover the blood. For sure women are obligated. There are all kinds of mitzvot. He says Verov mitzvot came. Most of the mitzvot are in this category. But he lists Svirat HaOmer as one of the mitzvot asei she'ein hazman grama, which is so startling that it led some of the achronim to point out that maybe this is a printer's error, a mistake. I mean, that's how incomprehensible this is. But at one juncture, the Rav actually gave an explanation to what this is all about. Why women are, according to Ramban, biblically obligated in the mitzvah of Svirat HaOmer. And this comes to the core as to why there are two countings. One count is the days, and one count is the weeks. So the count of the days, as we said, is to bridge between Yitziat Mitzrayim to Matan Torah, fine, or it's bridging the two korbanot, fine. It's all very nice. But why do you have to count the weeks? What does that do? What does that accomplish? So we know that with regard to the Chagim, what creates the sanctity of the day of Pesach, the 15th of Nisan? It's the Rosh Chodesh of Nisan. If you don't have the 1st of Nisan, you don't have the 15th. If you don't have a mechanism of Rosh Chodesh for the 1st of the month, then the Chagim of that month do not apply. And that's why there has to be some type of mechanism for Rosh Chodesh to function today, and not just being a piece of paper that you got from, you know, some organization before Rosh Hashanah with an envelope, you know, to send a donation. But there are halachot, a shir in itself. We once talked about it, how it works. But it's contingent upon Rosh Chodesh. Every chag except Shavuos. Shavuot falls out in the month of Sivan. But there's no date in the Chumash for Shavuot. It can either be the 5th of Sivan, the 6th of Sivan, or 7th of Sivan. In fact, in our calendar, it's always the 6th. But that's just a calendar accident, that it comes out like that. Why? Because Shavuot is 50 days after the counting of the Omer. It's not linked to Rosh Chodesh Sivan. And in the days that they did a visual sighting of the moon, so it could conceivably be that Rosh Chodesh Iyar was one day Rosh Chodesh, which meant that Nisan had 29 days, and it can conceivably be that Iyar also has 29 days. And then Shavuos would come out on the 5th of the Sivan. Or Hafoch, the opposite. It could conceivably be that the Nisan was 30 days and Iyar was 30 days. So that year Shavuos would come out on the 7th of Nisan. Iyar of Sivan. Or it can be an in-between. Either Nisan had 29 days and Iyar had 30 days, or Nisan had 30 days and Iyar has 29 days, as we have it today in our calendar. So then it comes out in the middle on the 6th of Sivan. But that's just an accident when it falls out, the 5th, 6th, or 7th. It's not linked to any Rosh Chodesh. So much so that the Chatam Sofer 150 years ago made a claim that there's really no need for Yom Tov Sheni for Shavuot in Chutz Laaretz. Why? Because the whole reason for Yom Tov Sheni is because in Bavel they never knew when they sanctified the moon for Tishrei or for Nisan. So they didn't know. It took more than 2 weeks to get the information. So comes the 15th of Nisan, they're not sure when is Pesach. They did a second day. But by Shavuos, they knew when the second day of Pesach was already. After 50 days, they figured it out. They got the information in Bavel. So there was never Sveka Diyomer. There was never a doubt as to when Shavuot would be, because they can retroactively rewrite the calendar and know when the 50th day of the Omer was in absolute terms. So the Chatam Sofer says that Chachamim, in order to maintain symmetry with all the Chagim, made an institution of Yom Tov Sheni for Shavuot. It's a special institution, and he said it's more serious of a Yom Tov Sheni halacha than the other two Yom Tov Shenis for Sukkot and Pesach. Yantar Sheni for Sukkot, Pesach is based on doubt, and Yantar Sheni for Shavuot is based on absolute. It's like Hanukkah, you have to light Hanukkah candles, you have to read the Megillah on Purim, you have to observe Yantar Sheni of Shavuot. It's an absolute institution. It's a very, very interesting idea. So the Rav said, Sfirat HaOmer, of the counting of the weeks, that creates the scenario of the sanctity of the day of Chag HaShavuot. Shiv'a Shavuot Tispor Lach. Without that counting, you would not have Chag HaShavuot. Am Yisrael makes that counting. And Chag HaShavuot doesn't mean eating blintzes. Chag HaShavuot means it's a Yom Tov with its requisite Isurei Melacha, limitation of certain activities. It has sanctity of the day. Are women part of the sanctity of the day of Chag HaShavuot? 100%, 1,000%. So why shouldn't women be part of the process that creates the Kedushat HaYom? That's the way the Rav explained it. And that's why women would be obligated, according to Rabban, to count the weeks of the Omer. But whereas there's no separation between the counting of the weeks and the days, it's one package deal, so women would be obligated to count, on a biblical level, Sfirat HaOmer. And that's how the Rav explained the Ramban's view, why women are obligated in Sfirat HaOmer. Ladies, you happy with the Ramban? Yeah. Much better, right? Much better. I mean, it really takes the mitzvah of Sfirat HaOmer and puts it on a completely different plateau. And just to end this a little bit on an interesting note as well, the position of source number one, the Rambam Sefer HaMitzvot, as they say, for the reason that we've assembled here today, the Rambam Sefer HaMitzvot, the Book of Mitzvot, where is it? It's Mitzvah 161, Kuf Samach Aleph. That's very nice. So, what do you have before and what do you have after? What you have before and after are all the Chagim. First, he deals with Shabbat, he deals with Kiddush HaChodesh, then he deals with Pesach, he deals with Shavuot, Sfirat HaOmer, he deals with Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot. That strikes a chord, because that's all Parshat Emor. That's all Parshat Emor. The Rambam could have easily enough integrated the mitzvah of Sfirat HaOmer in Sefer Mitzvot, in where he deals with the mitzvahs of Korbanot. He could have done it. Take a look what he does in the Mishnah Torah, in source number 6. Where does he talk about the mitzvah of Sfirat HaOmer? He talks about it in the context of Beit HaMikdash activity. So why in Sefer Mitzvot does he talk about Sfirat HaOmer in the context of the Chagim, of the Yamim Tovim? He could have shtipped it into the mitzvot. For example, Birkat Kohanim. Birkat Kohanim is a mitzvah in Beit HaMikdash, but it's also a mitzvah for Am Yisrael, as we know. So where does the Rambam talk about it in Mishnah Torah? He talks about it at the end of Hilchot Tefillah, davening. It's a regular, here in Eretz Yisrael, we do it every day, and the Sfardim have Birkat Kohanim and Chutz Laretz also. It's only Ashkenazim don't have the Birkat Kohanim throughout the year, except for Chagim and Tefillat Musaf. But the Sfardim have Birkat Kohanim. The Rambam never said no Chutz Laretz. It's a mitzvah. It's part and parcel of Tefillah. Part and parcel of Tefillah. And you should know that Shmoneh Esrei technically ends with the Brachav Modim. Because Hatov Shimcha L'chana Na'el Lehodot. That's really the end of Tefillah. And the proof is that we do the bowings, the beginning of the first Bracha, and the beginning and end of the first Bracha, of Shmoneh Esrei, Magen Avraham, and the beginning and the end of Modim. Modim Anachnu Lach, and also Hatov Shimcha L'chana Lehodot. We do Baruch Atah Hashem. So what's Sim Shalom? So Rav explained that it's a reaction to Birkat Kohanim. Sim Shalom Tova Uvracha, that corresponds to Yevurecha Hashem. And then it says, Ki Ba'or Panecha Tatalanu, that corresponds to Ya'er Hashem Panevadecha. And then it says, V'to Benecha Levarecha Tamcha Yisrael B'cholet V'choshah B'shlomecha, and that corresponds to V'yasem Lecha Shalom. So it's a reaction to Birkat Kohanim, which is placed right before Sim Shalom. And that's why Ashkenazim, in those tefillot that don't have Birkat Kohanim, like Mincha Ma'ariv, don't say Sim Shalom. They say Shalom Rav, Yisrael Amchat Hasidim. It's just an abbreviated version. So when do Ashkenazim say Sim Shalom? Whenever there is, in reality, or even in theory, Birkat Kohanim. Even in theory, there could be Birkat Kohanim, we say Sim Shalom, because in its place, you have Elokeinu Kevoteinu, Borcheinu Babracham, Shuleshet, Batorah Ktuvah. So then there's a reaction of Sim Shalom, like on Mincha of a Tanit Tzibur. Mincha v'tanit tzibur, Ashkenazim say Sim Shalom, because it's supposed to have Birkat Kohanim. Whether Kohanim duchen or not is a different issue. But it's supposed to get Birkat Kohanim, so there's a reaction to Birkat Kohanim on Mincha v'tanit tzibur. Where does the Rambam talk about Birkat Kohanim in the Sefer HaMitzvot? In the middle of Beit HaMikdash issues. So take a look what happened here. With regard to Birkat Kohanim, in the Mishneh Torah, in the daily halachot, he puts duchanim, brikat kohanim, and davanim, and tefillah, every day mitzvah. In Sefer Mitzvot, he integrates it in the korbanot. With Sefirat HaOmer, it's just the opposite. Just the opposite. In the Mishneh Torah, he talks about the Sefirat HaOmer in the Beit Mikdash activity. But he talks the Sefer Mitzvot, there it's part of the Chagim, just like you have Pesach, you have Sefirat HaOmer, you have Shavuot, you have Rosh Hashanah, you have Yom Kippur, you have Shaifer. It's all part of the schedule of Chagim that's like our Judaism today. Without Beit Mikdash, we still have this. So there's something that's out of sync. But there is a common thread here. What obligated the Rambam was the position of the mitzvah in the Chumash, the context of where it finds itself in the Chumash. Birkat Kohanim is found in the context of Beit HaMikdash activity. It's found in Parshat Naso, right before Vayhi B'yom Hakim et HaMishkan, the construction of the Mishkan and Beit HaMikdash activity gets going, and at least according to Rashi, by allusion in Parshat Shmini, where there it says Aaron lifted up his hands and they said Birkat Kohanim. Rashi says this was Birkat Kohanim as well. It's all part and parcel of the Beit HaMikdash activity. In Sefer Mitzvot, the Rambam, he's linked to the Chumash because his proof text, whether something is a mitzvah or not, is a Midrash Halacha. He's using the Mechilta, he's using the Safran Sefer Vayikra, he's using the Sifrei Bamidbar and Dvarim. Once you're using the Midrash Halacha as your proof text, if a pasuk is a mitzvah or not, you're linking yourself to the order of the Chumash. So that's why Birkat Kohanim in the Sefer Mitzvot is found in the Beit HaMikdash Mitzvot. But in the Halachot, we're not talking about mitzvah derivation. We're talking about Klal Yisrael performing mitzvot. Better put it in the Hilchot Tefillah, where it's a daily mitzvah with like davening. With regard to Sefirat HaOmer, where is it found? It's found in Parshat HaMoadot. It's found in the Chumash, in the Parsha of Pesach, Sefirat HaOmer, Shavuot, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot. So that's where he puts it in the Sefer Mitzvot, in Kuf Samach Aleph. In the Mishnah Torah, the Rambam wants to make a point that the beginning of the counting of Sefirat HaOmer is linked to a Beit HaMikdash activity. So it's more appropriate to put it in the Sefer, in the Hilchot Midin Musafin. So here the Rambam gave a lot of thought as to, you know, where he would discuss a particular mitzvah. And of course, more often than not, you find sometimes discrepancies. How come here he quoted this pasuk, and in the other source he quoted the other pasuk? That makes for a lot of shirim klaliyim at the yeshivas. It gives a lot of parnasa to Rosh Yeshivas for the last 800 years, you know, and that's all very, very fine and dandy. So even though there were quite a few sources on the page, we ended up doing most of the sources, and I think we ended up learning something about the Rambam's viewpoint of Sefirat HaOmer. So if you haven't counted yet, so it's the 8th day of the Omer, and in this country, if you listen to the news, as I do, 6 in the morning, driving to shul, so they'll give you the date, and they'll give you the Sefira, but they give you the Sefira, so I'm a Nusach Sfaradi, Hayom Shmona Yamim LaOmer, Shehem Shavu Echad V'Yom Echad. Why did a Sfaradim count like that? I don't know exactly 100% why they do that, but that's how they count. Ashkenazim count Hayom Shmona Yamim Shehem Shavu Echad V'Yom Echad LaOmer. Now whether it's LaOmer or BaOmer is another shir in itself. Our Rebbe of Soloveitchik said both. He counted every day with BaOmer and LaOmer, but you know, I have a certain proof that really it's BaOmer, even though the Sfaradim say LaOmer. It's Ashkenazim say BaOmer. How do we call the Yom Tov of the 33rd day of the Omer? Lag Ba'omer. Nobody calls it Lag La'omer. Nobody calls it Lag La'omer. And there was a Maisa here in Yerushalayim when the people came from, the Olim came from the former Soviet Union, so one of the biggest issues was proving that they're Jewish. Most of them didn't come with their mother's ketubah. It was very difficult for some of them to actually prove they were Jewish. So I heard this from a wonderful Dayan, who unfortunately passed away young from illness, Rav Shilo Rafael, Zechon Lebracha. He was the son of Dr. Yitzhak Rafael from the Mosad Rav Kook. He was minister of religion for a certain time from the Mizrahi. The kid said, Rav Shilo Rafael was a Rav in Kiryat Moshe neighborhood. So he once told me that that there was a woman, an elderly woman who came in Aliyah, and proving that she was Jewish impacted now on all of her descendants here in Israel. If she's Jewish, they're all Jewish. And she had to prove that she's Jewish, and she couldn't remember a thing about what it meant to be Jewish. So they asked this, and Rav Shilo asked him, can you remember any name of any Yom Tov, from any Yom Tov? So she says, like Bamer. So, I mean, he said it like with real Russian heavy, like a Lubavitcher was there, like Bamer. So Rav Shilo said, a goy doesn't know how to say like Bamer. He's like Bamer. Gerashi said it with such a Yiddish atam, he said. Says, imagine on that basis to prove that she's Jewish and then to declare that all the children and grandchildren, they're all Jewish here in Eretz Israel. Just on a like Bamer. Like Bamer, right? Okay, so we have, I'm going to squeeze a little bit. The question was asked about Shehecheyanu. So, you know what? I can actually carry this over to next week also. So remind me, Jay, that the question, you'll come next week, I'll because we ran out of time and I don't want to cut into the next teacher. So we'll talk about why we don't make Shehecheyanu, and I'll see what the Rambam has to say in Sefer Mitzvot, if there's any relationship to any mitzvah of Shehecheyanu, what the criteria might be. Okay? That's it.
I had a friend who escaped the most.